Or wonder, what did that DJ just play? AfterFM.com is the answer. We have all of our archive shows on AfterFM.com, as well as exclusive content such as podcasts, as well as interviews and local artists. That's AfterFM.com. Go check it out.
Thank you, Matt, so much for that fabulous Highway 322. It is 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. I want to give you the correct station ID. It's KGNU 88.5 FM, 1390 AM Boulder, Denver, 98.7 megahertz in Fort Collins, and 93.7 megahertz in Nederland, Colorado, and around the world at KGNU.org. My name is Joanne. This is the Dixieland Show. I'm thrilled to be with you. I have a very cool interview for you tonight, and I hope you enjoy it. It's about Storyville, that magical place in New Orleans where prostitution was legal. But we're going to start off with some George Lewis right now doing Burgundy Street Blues, one of my favorite traditional New Orleans jazz songs.
Thank you.
a great Fats Waller doing Viper's Drag. Before that, we heard George Lewis live, I believe, perhaps in Japan or maybe England, probably in the 60s, doing his signature song, Burgundy Street Blues. A great clarinetist, George Lewis, played with the Preservation Hall Band as he made his resurrection in the 60s. So I was just in New Orleans, and I saw this very interesting exhibit at the museum there, the New Orleans History Museum. It'll be mentioned in the interview, and I just had to get these folks on the air to talk about Storyville in particular, which is, you know, the legalized prostitution area in New Orleans that was quite fabulous, and many people believe that that's the fount of jazz in New Orleans, but of course it's not. But there was tremendous music in Storyville, and we'll hear about all of this in the interview. So let's give it a listen, and we'll come back and we'll play some music from that era. And it will be heavy on piano and ragtime, because that was the popular music of the time. Here is an interview about Storyville, madams, and music. Hi, it's Joanne, and we're doing an interview with Pamela Arsenault, who is the senior librarian and rare books curator, and Eric Seifert, who is an assistant curator and a historian at the Historic New Orleans Collection right here in the heart of the French Quarter. Welcome to KGNU.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, Pamela, what I'd like to do is start with you and educate our listeners a little bit about what Storyville. We're going to be talking about Storyville. We're going to be talking about music and this fabulous exhibit that's taking place here in New Orleans now through December, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
So can you let our listeners know what exactly is Storyville?
Storyville was a social experiment in the containment of prostitution. New Orleans was not the first city to have a restricted red light district. That honor may go to Virginia City, Nevada, on the Comstock Lode Silver Strike as early as 1865. But New Orleans, being a large port city and a proliferation of prostitutes all over all the residential areas as well as the riverfront areas, Alderman Sidney Story introduced an ordinance in 1897 to confine prostitutes to one geographically described area. And this area was to go into effect January 1st, 1898. Outside of this area, prostitutes were not allowed to ply their trade. The area, indeed, was just above the French Quarter, the area bounded by Basin, North Robertson, Iberville, and St. Louis streets. Within those parameters, anything went. There were lots of brothels of all economic stripes, everything from the top of the line, most gaudy palaces, down to narrow one or two room cribs that prostitutes worked in, mostly as shift workers. Also within this district were numerous music clubs and restaurants and other venues of interest to men about town. My book, which is also tied into our current exhibit, Storyville, Madams, and Music, is called Guidebooks to Sin, the Blue Books of Storyville, New Orleans. New Orleans had directories of prostitutes and with advertisements for the better brothels, as well as advertisements of for goods and services of interest to men visiting the district. In fact, beyond just listing prostitutes and brothels, the Blue Books promoted Storyville, the Tenderloin, this red light district, as an entertainment venue at a time when New Orleans itself was being advertised throughout the nation as to attract particularly white men of means. I will also mention that there was a black Storyville at the time that was part of the original 1897 ordinance. It was a much poorer area. It was largely for African Americans. There were no fancy guidebooks touting its palaces. There were none. But there were numerous venues in Black Storyville where music was played and where musicians found work and inspiration from each other.
Is the Blue Book of New Orleans the only one of its kind where legalized prostitution was actually advertised?
No. Neither was New Orleans the first city to have guidebooks to its prostitutes. The earliest known is from 1565, from Venice. Of course, London and Paris had numerous guides to the courtesans of those cities.
So many people on this particular trip that I've been here this year have talked about the myth and the magic of New Orleans. And at more than one lecture, I've heard that referred to, and it caught me because I am completely under the spell of the magic of New Orleans. You know, every year I come, every year I learn a little bit more, and I peel back the facade of the myth of New Orleans, you know, and the magic. So I think many people that know jazz know about Louis Armstrong, know about these iconic names. Louis Armstrong, who was born in the Black Storyville. Jelly Roll Morton, who really helped, I think, catapult the story and the myth of Storyville and the professor, the piano-playing professor, to the country as a whole, whether it's true or not. We're not going to debate in this interview right now. I think a lot of people do believe that jazz may have risen from the professor at the bordello at Lulu White's, which I'm sure that they did. But Eric, we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, the richness of New Orleans and this music that did rise from perhaps that era or even before that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, as Pamela and I have worked on this exhibit, we've kind of come to discussing the Storyville District as an entertainment district, a place where there was legalized prostitution, also a lot of music, a lot of places to go dancing, and of course, a lot of places to drink alcohol. It was not the only place in New Orleans that you could hear music. It wasn't the only place where people were performing. What it may have been is a place that had more venues and gigs and musicians working than anywhere else in the city during 20-year period. A lot of musicians were playing in Storyville. They were almost entirely either African-American or Afro-Creole. That we only know of a handful of exceptions of white musicians. Looking through the record, there are over 200 of these musicians we've been able to identify, and they were working in Storyville, but also out by the lake for picnics, parks out in the River Bend area, and of course working in marching bands in different neighborhoods, which is a tradition we have in New Orleans that dates back to the 19th century. In Storyville, there were more opportunities to play, and I think there were more opportunities to learn from fellow musicians. And also there was a bit of competitiveness between the musicians, and these different elements kind of stirred the pot and helped this generation, the first couple generations of musicians, grow. In the exhibition, we have the opportunity to talk about the different types of music that were being played in Storyville. So, for example, you mentioned the brothels. Those typically would have had a single piano player, we call a professor, that would be playing whatever the audience wanted to hear. In this case, the audience would have been white men of means. They were spending there to spend a lot of money, so the professor needed to be able to play whatever they wanted. And we know that ranged from ragtime to classical pieces, opera overtures, Tin Pan Alley hits, traditional American songs, all kinds of music. Jelly Roll Morton, one of the things he says in a piece of personal testimony we have on display in the exhibit, is that you can play anything in jazz time if you know what you're doing. So the point is, what musicians in this period in New Orleans, not only in Storyville but elsewhere, are doing is starting to experiment with ways of playing popular music. And that is really kind of the seed or how jazz starts to develop.
Interesting. So, like, in relationship to Buddy Bolden, who I might use as a key point in New Orleans jazz history, and anyone who listens to my show knows who Buddy Bolden is, so, but there's no recordings for Buddy Bolden. So could you give us just a little timeline of Buddy Bolden and what we kind of call the birth of jazz coming from New Orleans?
Sure. So Buddy Bolden starts leading his own band in the late 19th century, the last handful of years. His popularity is at its highest in the first handful of years of the 20th century. Buddy Bolden is a cornet player. His band, there's a photo of Buddy Bolden's band, and it has two clarinets, a cornet, a trombone, a guitar and an upright bass. So you get the sense of how the sound would have worked. He was the leader of the band. He would have played the melody. The clarinet and the trombone would have played around him, playing a counter melody around him. To position him in this city, one of the places he's known for playing is known as the Funky Bunt Hall, which was a multi-purpose space he played in the uptown Storyville area, not far from where Louis Armstrong grew up. But he played all over the city. He played, like I mentioned, in that Riverbend area in Oakland Park. He would have played for picnics. I don't believe that he played in the downtown official Storyville area. There was kind of a divide between uptown and downtown musicians, those living, and let's see if I can explain this for out-of-towners, but there's a major thoroughfare going through what we call uptown and downtown, known as Canal Street. African Americans living uptown of that at this period would have been recent immigrants from plantations largely. Those living downtown were people identifying as Afro-Creole, who may have been speaking French and had been free people of color prior to the Civil War. There's a big class divide going on there. So Buddy Bolden's an uptown African American. He's not known to have crossed that line and played downtown. Louis Armstrong did manage to get across. Another Joe Oliver did play in the Storyville proper. So there is an interesting divide there. Buddy Bolden kind of predates that group. He becomes one of the popular band leaders of the period, playing, introducing different playing styles, adding blue notes, this heterophony, the idea of playing the melody with multiple instruments, which we can trace to spiritualist churches of uptown African Americans, which we can then trace to the ring shout of the plantation life. So you can get a lot of the elements as you go back into Southern life on plantations. He's also introducing syncopation. The best way I can describe this is his band is the first band that we know of that was using all of these jazz elements on a semi-consistent basis. Of course, these guys are performers and entertainers, but they're also working stiffs, and they need to play what the audience wants to hear. So if your audience wants to hear something, what they would call sweet music, you know, kind of formal, here's what it should sound like. They play that, and then when you had an audience maybe at the Funky Butt, maybe after hours, that wanted a little bit, something a little bit newer or a fresh sound, or maybe something a little bit more brash or sensual, they would play kind of adding these jazz elements. He unfortunately has a mental breakdown, and by 1907 is out of the scene. He's in Jackson, Louisiana at the state mental facility and never comes back.
Where he dies.
Okay, that's my break in the interview. I hope that's piqued your interest some. We're going to play some music by Tony Jackson, who was just ever so briefly mentioned in that. But I want to also refer you to the movie Pretty Baby, which was, you know, starring Brooke Shields and Susan Sarandon and David Carradine, I believe. So David Carradine's character is loosely based on someone named Ernest Bullock, who was an amazing photographer. And he was a professional photographer, so he took pictures of boats and buildings. That's what you did at the turn of the century in those days. But he also had a fascination with the women of Storyville. And his photos are the only visual that we have of these women. And so there's some music. You know, the whole thing is just a great movie to go back and look at. So I'm going to play two by Tony Jackson, one titled Pretty Baby. I think, yes, Jelly Roll Morton is playing this. And then one called I'm Certainly Going to See About That. So, and this Tony Jackson also, very little is known about him. I don't believe there's any true recordings of him. He was gay, that is known, and very shy. But he truly was a professor in the brothels of the day. So let's listen to Pretty Baby right here on KGNU. Pretty baby,
He'd know I was coming in when he hear me do that, see? And then sing it. You can talk about your jelly rolls, but none of them compare. Pretty baby, oh my.
Changing of the moon.
wanted to ask you about researching this book, Guidebooks to Sin, by Pamela Arsenault, published by the Historic New Orleans Collection, and it is an accompanying book to the exhibit that we've been talking about. How difficult was it to research this kind of stuff? Because as somebody who really loves Storyville, I find that the pickings are rather slim as far as people writing books and the research being done. It's on an upswing. People are looking at Race Along the Color Line and this kind of unusual mix that is New Orleans, and certainly with Storyville playing a pivotal role of feminism, if I may, you know, female-owned businesses, but the negative side of that being the prostitution. So how did you come to write the book, and how difficult was it to write the book?
This book was years in the making. Prior to my being hired here at the collection as a reference librarian, back in 1981, I had read a few books on New Orleans to prepare myself for the interview. One of the books I read was Al Rose's 1974 publication, Storyville, New Orleans. In that book was a chapter called The Press of Storyville, and it discussed underground newspapers like The Mascot, which had ceased publication by the time Storyville was established, and The Sunday Sun, which reported underworld doings and red light gossip. Also in there was a little bit about the Blue Books, and that's what piqued my interest. I'm a librarian. This is the bibliographic aspect of the sex trade. I discovered that my new place of employment had a rather large collection of these, and I got to play with them. At that time, of course, the collection, we were not computerized back in the 80s, and department heads encouraged staff to become hands-on familiar with our holdings. I needed little encouragement to look further into the Blue Books and learn a little more about Storyville, and I wrote an article for the journal Louisiana History in 1987 with a few illustrations and some material that I'd gotten from Al Rose and from an earlier bibliographer of the Blue Books, Charles Hartman, a somewhat eccentric scholar and bookman who published his bibliography over 80 years ago in 1936. I would gather a little more information here, a little more there, and I'd pick up knowledge and learn some things. New research brought new information to light, and I came to realize just how many errors there was in my initial article. So what to do about that? Well, I kicked that can down the road for a while, but it was a good thing because it allowed me to gather even more material and to look a little more critically at these guidebooks beyond just the listings of prostitutes and the flowery, coy descriptions of madams' houses, and wonder why, on some of these cases, why were there national and international brands being advertised in a local brothel guide? There are ads in the Blue Books, like I said, for services and other goods of interest to men, you know, liquor, cigars, champagnes, wines, taxi service, venereal disease cures. And it brought me to realize that there was more to them than that. The ads themselves don't tell you anything about the women, really. They don't give you concrete information about the specific madams who paid for these ads. Also, we have a collection of fakes that were produced in the years since Storyville closed, and a lot of those have really salacious ads, and they weren't anything like the genuine Storyville era Blue Books. People producing these for a 20th century tourist market didn't think that the real thing, the genuine Storyville Blue Books promoting prostitution in the district, were quite racy enough. Yeah, they were really fascinating to me, as you can tell, and I felt that there was enough misinformation out there that I had to nail all of this down. in a book. The book is meant to be an annotated bibliography of the known guides to Storyville.
I'm hoping your next book will be the history and the unknownness of the madams of Storyville.
They left so little information. In one of the earliest editions of Blue Book, you might see a woman working for an established madam. Two or three editions later, that prostitute working at another house is now a madam in her own right.
We're speaking with Pamela Arsenault and Eric Seifert, both of the Historic New Orleans Collection, about an exhibit that's going on right now that's running through December 2nd. So if you come to New Orleans, and I know many of you will, you'll come and visit one of the many exhibitions in this historic French Quarter and check this out. This is called Storyville Madams in Music. I want to thank you both for taking time out of your busy day.
Thank you, Joanne.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Ooh.
Someone named Elzadie Robinson and Johnny St. Cyr on the banjo. Before that, we heard Creole Bells by somebody named Bodewalt Lampe. That was written in 1900, which was, I did get a playlist of music that would have been played in Storyville, of course, of a lot of Scott Joplin, a lot of ragtime. As I think they alluded to, the music that was played in the houses of prostitution were popular music of the time, which would have been kind of like show tunes and, you know, lighthearted stuff, not a whole lot of blues. I do have some Lizzie Miles here, who is a New Orleans native and a pretty cool artist, and we'll play some of her, but I don't like show tunes, and I don't like lighthearted music, so I did my best to find some interesting things. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did bringing it to you. Again, the name of the entity that the exhibit is at until September is the Historic New Orleans Collection, and you can find that online at thnc.org. Also, somebody called saying that they remember seeing those photographs by Ernest Belloc, and that Belloc is spelled B-E-L-L, let me see, O-C-Q, Belloc is how it's French, in the Aperture magazine. And yes, indeed, it's a very interesting story about the photographs in and itself. It is a book, but I believe it was a fellow named Lee Friedlander who brought them to light to the public in the 60s. So do look that up. It's, if you're interested and you want to see some iconic, beautiful photography by Ernest Belloc. And also, I wanted to give a shout out to our friend Jerry Maddock, who is feeling under the weather. And get well soon, Jerry. We miss you here. And I know all your fans miss your fabulous take on jazz that you bring to us here at KGNU. So we're looking forward to your return. We did hear Jelly Roll Morton doing Pretty Baby. Then we heard Tony Jackson's song called I'm Certainly, there's no L in there, Certainly Going to See About That. And then James Booker performing Whining Boy, which I think was performed in that movie Pretty Baby, which is why I want to go back and see it again. Of course, you know, James Booker, a tremendous piano player from New Orleans. I urge you to see the documentary called The Bayou Maharaji about his life, his very short-lived life and impact on modern music in New Orleans, R&B, jazz, you name it. He was a genius. So James Booker, write that one down. Let's get back to the music. We just have a little bit of time left. We've got some various and sundries things that I have found, so I hope you like it. Thank you always for your support of KGNU and for independent media, which gives us the privilege and the opportunity to bring you crazy things like stuff about Storyville. So here's something called Dallas Blues. I do believe this is Louis Armstrong performing the Dallas Blues. Thank you.
like a hound, a lonesome hound. Then you stop to say, let me go away from this old town, this awful town. There's a place I know, folks won't pass me by. Dallas, Texas, that's the town I cry. Oh, hear me cry. And I'm going back to stay there till I die. Until I die, I've got the Dallas blues and the Main Street heart disease. It's buzzing round. I've got the Dallas blues and the Main Street heart disease. It's buzzing round my head like a swarm of little honeybees.
What do you want, gal? Lord, come out here and see your man going down the street with Mandy. Gone away from my door and don't come tell me nothing about my man.
If he's everywhere you go, doing things you think I just must know, don't come tell me nothing about my man, nothing about my man. Sweet man, I'm crazy about him, indeed I am. He's so sweet, I'm raving about him, oh, that man. I love him more and more every day, don't care nothing what the people say. I love him so, I want you all to know, I want you all to know. If you see him in tight places, laughing, talking in other women's faces, don't tell me nothing about my man, nothing about my man. If you see him out till fall, trying his keys in another woman's door, don't tell me nothing about my man,
nothing about that man. Don't tell me if you see him hanging around. I'm acting like he was a big foolish clown. And if he's everywhere you go, doing things you think I just must know, please don't tell me nothing about my man, nothing tall about that man.
All right, that was Lizzie Miles. Thought it was going to be something called Jelly Roll, but I'm pretty sure that was called My Sweet Man. Recorded around 1920-ish. The time period of Storyville, I think we mentioned, was 1898 to 1918. So I've stepped outside of the time there a little bit, but just because it's all so good. We started off with a song called Creole Bells by a fellow named Bodewalt Lampe. That was recorded in 1900. And I could hear, you know, I'm a big fan of Mississippi John Hurt, and he does a song called Creole Bell. And it is indeed that song, but it's his own particular take on that. So I hope you caught that. We heard something, Love Crazy Blues, El Zadie Robinson with Johnny St. Cyr on the banjo. Dallas Blues, not by Louis Armstrong, obviously. Beautiful recording, but that was recorded by Louis Armstrong in 1929. And then Lizzie Miles, My Sweet Man. We're just going to round out the show with some other various and sundries rags, because ragtime was extremely popular. It was the music of the day. There was Scott Joplin rags, which we know is very popular. But if you're a fan of KGNU and you listen to Jack Rummel's Ragtime America, you know that the canon of ragtime is huge, and it comes in all shapes and forms. So I do believe there was a lot of ragtime being played in the brothels of Storyville. Here's something called let's play this Dixie Mama Gone by, I don't know who. I'll have to find out for you when we get back.
Thank you.
Two by Armand Piron and the New Orleans Orchestra. Mama's Gone. We heard that twice. Thank you to the gods of Radioland. Recorded in 1923, and that last one was Louisiana Swing. Hey, it's 8:57. Thank you so much, for, as always, for your kind attention and your support of independent radio. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. At 9 o'clock, we're going to swing you over to Swing Shift with Dave Gloss, and then Jazz Lives Till Midnight. So thank you so much. We're going to go out with a song called Faraway Blues.
Thank you, Joanne, and a hearty good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Gloss with tonight's version of Swing Shift here on KGNU. And after we take care of some issues here with the radio gods. We'll be back with you in just a second. Tonight's swing shift is a